Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're tuned in to the best radio station inside of my house in Bellamy, Texas. The Love Lift Me Up Show, featuring gospel artists, psalmists, authors, educators, and community leaders. Let's give it up for the new Love Lift Me Up Show with Dr. Love. Welcome,
welcome, welcome to the Love Lift Jesus Up Ministry, where Jesus shines with love. I'm your host today, Afrida Love, and today we have a very special guest, but first, let us pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day, Lord. We thank you for blessing us to wake up this morning and starting us on our way. Lord, we're asking you, would you bless Mr. Chris, Heavenly Father, as he shares his gifts and talents that you have given him. We ask that you protect him from the storm that's going on in Pennsylvania, and not just him, but other individuals who are in that particular state, Heavenly Father. Lord, we're asking, would you bless each listener, those who are going to listen, Lord, and we just ask that you bless us to have a very good interview, and you just be in it and just be well pleased with what we do. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Okay, I'm going to read Psalm 46, 1 through 3, and it reads, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. Selah. I have read to you Psalm 46, 1 through 3. May the Lord add a blessing to the hearers' doors and the secrets of his holy word. And now the moment you've been waiting for, I have a best-seller author on the line, and I'm so excited, who says that he has shown people how to master, how God has wired them and what God has created them to be, and also to be able to find their zero point. So without giving away a lot of things about Chris, I want to introduce to some and present to others Mr. Chris. Mr. Chris, how are you doing today?
Wonderful. Afrida, how are you?
Good. Thank you for asking. Mr. Chris, I'm going to ask you a few questions about your book, and I just want you to share your information because I really feel like this is going to be a wonderful interview, and we're going to receive some wonderful insight from you. Okay?
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Mr. Chris, can you tell us something unique about you that distinguishes you from society?
Something unique that distinguishes me from society. Well, I guess I'll say there'd be a couple things. First of all, I'm one of the only guys currently not in a rock band who still has long hair. I guess that would be a unique thing. But moreover, what I do is what makes me unique, and I believe that God has led me to find my zero point. He's taken me through a lot of trials and tribulations. I have a wife who's divorced me. I've lost a lot of worldly possessions, and I've lost pretty much everything in the process of finding out how I was wired. And that's why I'm so determined and so passionate about sharing with other folks that, that their wiring is the key, and helping to lead them to understand their wiring, and understand, what God's put inside of them to do in this world.
Okay. Great. Now, you've written a bestseller, The Blueprint. Please describe three ideas readers may gain from reading this particular bestseller book.
Sure, and it's called The Secret Blueprint to More, and the reason there's nothing in the little blank after more is the fact that if you follow the principles in the book and the blueprint in the book, you can apply it to any area of your life and get more. One of the principles in the book is talking about wasting your time on busy work. We all get caught up in things during the day that distract us, and what we don't realize is that we only have a limited amount of mental energy during the day. And if we use all that up on busy work, we can't get the important things done. Another thing you'll learn by reading the book is to understand things called microexpressions and understand why understand why people give off microexpressions, understand that it's part of it all started back when we were hunters and gatherers, and we had to understand within a millisecond whether the person standing in front of us was a friend or a foe. And and it's something everybody picks up on, and it's the reason why you might walk into an event and like somebody or not like somebody, and not be able to understand and articulate why. And the third thing really is just to understand yourself a whole lot better. There's probably 100 questions in the book that you can ask yourself to dig deeper and start down the path of understanding how you're wired. And I will say one thing real quick is the fact that that's kind of the first book in the series. In other words, that book came out right before I went through all my major trials and tribulations and figured out how I was wired. But looking at it, it's kind of the preface, so to speak. It's the introduction. There's three more books that I have in the can right now. I'm just doing some tweaking and some editing and also some praying to God as when the right time to finish them up and release them is, because some of them are going to teach people some things, and some of them are going to be very personal. So I guess that would be the biggest three things.
Okay. Wow, that's great information. I was writing them down because I'm going to buy this book. Okay, what are some important tips to becoming a bestseller?
Yeah, I mean, the truth of the matter is it is easier today to become a bestseller than it ever has been, and that's because facilities like Amazon can do things to help you. The biggest thing I would say is if you want to become a bestseller, the first thing is of course, start writing. And if you don't think that you're a writer, do what I did. Just crack open Microsoft PowerPoint and everything works. That's only partially a joke. The whole point is this. Is if you feel stuck in the writing process, what you want to do is find something to open up your creativity. And, for me, it happened to be Microsoft PowerPoint, because there was a background in PowerPoint that looked like a parchment. And for whatever reason, it's what opened up my creativity channel and just allowed the words to flow, got me out of my own way, allowed the words that God wanted to have on that page to flow, and it just came out. So the first thing is open up your creativity. The second thing is utilize services like Amazon and more specifically CreateSpace to help you become a bestseller. There's a lot of ways now that you don't even have to go to a publishing house. You can do it all on your own to get your book on Amazon.com and other outlets around the world. And then once you do, the third, and I guess it would be the most critical thing to actually achieving the bestseller status, is put together a marketing plan. It's the same thing that big publishers would do. But the fortunate part about Amazon nowadays is that when you put together the right publishing or the right marketing plan and get books purchased in a defined time and in a short time frame, you can achieve your bestseller status. And then if you've written a good book, you can use that momentum to sell more copies of the book to get the word out, and also to generate more publicity. The third one right there is like I said, really the key. Is the really short version is Amazon adjusts their bestseller rankings. I believe it's either every half hour, every 15 minutes, or every hour. I forget exactly what it is. So if you create a great marketing campaign and lead people to your book in a certain defined time and get enough people to buy your book in a certain block of time, you'll end up getting yourself to the top of the bestseller list.
Okay, that's good information. All right. Now, within your book, you said that within your bio, you said that finding your zero point is the key to reducing frustration. Define zero point and explain that particular phrase.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm so glad you asked that question, Alfreda. Your zero point is, it's that It's that base level. It's the thing that God put inside of you. It's the thing that God put inside of everybody, the thing that they're supposed to be. It's in your DNA. It's in your makeup. It's before your purpose. I mean, a lot of people will say, well, what was your purpose in life? And it's like, it's great to find out what your purpose is, but this goes deeper. This is that kernel, that, you know, the seed that God planted inside of you. And what happens over our life is that we forget what that was. Because here's the problem, Alfreda, is when we're born, we know what it is. When we're a year old, we know what it is. When we're 2 years old, we actually know what it is. Unfortunately, we can't articulate that well at the ages of 1, 2, and even 3 years old what we're supposed to be and what we were meant to be, what God put inside, what we were born to be. And that's unfortunate because sometimes, and the reason it's unfortunate is because sometimes what you were meant to be gets masked over by well-meaning parents, well-meaning relatives, well-meaning, even society is well-meaning, but sometimes it gets masked over. Other times you're fortunate enough, you know, you have the people that, you know, say basically they've been doing one thing since they've been a kid. You know, I've got story after story I can tell you of entrepreneurs I know who at the age of, like one guy I know at the age of 8, he went to a pumpkin farm at the age of 8 and realized that if he bought pumpkins in bulk from the pumpkin farmer, he could get a cheaper price and then go sell them on his street. Well, that kid has been an entrepreneur ever since. I mean, that guy has been an entrepreneur ever since he's been a kid. So there's some people who find it, who know it, and who never get sidetracked. Others like me, and I'm sure you know a lot of people who did something that they were really good at when they were a kid, something they loved, something they were passionate about, the thing they were born to do, and then they took a detour. And what ends up happening is when you lose that, when you don't understand your zero point, when you don't understand, you know, your, you know, that thing that's inside of you, that DNA, you know, when you don't understand that, and when you don't understand how you were wired, how God wired you to be, you end up taking many detours and live a frustrating life. And what I pray for everybody is that even if it's the last hour of your life, you find out what your zero point is and you find out how you were wired to be. Because if you do, then you can say you lived a successful life.
That's right. Wow, that is very interesting. And you're exactly right. I was listening, and you said, you know, many times we say we're trying to find our purpose, but actually we're trying to find that zero point in which we were created. What were we created to be? And that's a really good point. Yes, that's good. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. And the reason, and to kind of wrap that thought, it just something popped in my head that I wanted to share. The reason I called it the zero point, and the reason that, you know, I speak of it in terms of how you're wired or the zero point, is because it's step zero in the process. It's that thing that without it, nothing else could be created. It's just like some ancient cultures, when they first developed the zero in the numbering system, it opened up all the other branches of mathematics. There's a lot of branches of mathematics we wouldn't have if we didn't have the zero. And zero and that zero point is the key and the most, you know, it is the most critical thing. It's, like I said, it's the DNA. It's the wiring inside you. One more thing real quick, and then we'll move on because I know you got plenty more questions. You can look at it in one other way. God, when he built you physically, you were built to grow us to a certain height, maybe to weigh a certain, a certain amount, have certain facial features, have certain, you know, your fingers are a certain length, that sort of thing. And that is easy to understand because you look at it and somebody grows to be 6'2" or 5'8" or 4'11" or 5'5", and that's very easy for people to understand. And we aren't out there trying to stretch a 6-foot-tall person into a 7-foot-tall person. But the problem comes in is because people don't understand their zero point. They're out there trying to do things that they weren't meant to do, they weren't designed to do, they weren't born to do, and they keep hitting a wall, and they keep hitting against frustration. And the reason is because the personal growth industry and a lot of my peers have tried to tell everybody for years that they can be anything they want to be, and they put all this pressure and all this weight on their shoulders. And I'm here to tell people you can be anything you want to be within how you're wired. So that was the other thing, you know, to kind of wrap that point up. Wiring is kind of the mental wiring. It's the thing you can't see. It's the thing that's most difficult for most people to understand because they think they can be anything, and what they really have to focus on is how was I wired, and then let me live within that wiring, and that will lead to happiness and success.
Wow, that is excellent. And when you brought up, you know, the particular part about how God created us, the creation, you know, our fingers and things like that is so precise. What I really thought about that zero point is that God wants us to come to him at a zero point like a child. He wants us to come to him humble and with nothing so that he can fill us up. So that, oh my gosh, that is so powerful. I have to get the book because I love this concept of zero point. It's just amazing. Excellent point, Mr. Chris.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Now, my next question is, how can people find out about how they are wired? There are a lot of tests that we take. I'm in the school system, and also in the military, we did this same thing where we would take tests to see what type of personality we have, you know, to find out about who we are. Can you tell people how they can find out how they are wired?
Yeah, exactly. And it all goes back to, and I'll keep it as simple as possible, it all goes back to your first vivid, visual, positive memory. Now, I know that didn't sound simple because there's way too many words, but I'm going to repeat it again. Your first vivid, visual, positive memory. So what I do is I take people through a process that we go back, and I will say, you know, at this point, I might change in the future, but at this point, there's no hypnosis, there's no drugs, there's no anything involved, there's no, you know, you don't get into a trance-like state. It's just, look, okay, what's the earliest thing you can remember? And most people will say something, you know, in their 20s, or depending on how old they are, it might be 15 to 20 years ago, and they'll remember that. And it's like, okay, that's fine. Let's put that aside. If it's a positive memory, let's not destroy it. Let's keep it. Let's just move it aside and act like a doorway. Open, you know, open or close that door, whichever works for your brain. What's the next thing you remember? And then what's the next thing and the next thing until you get all the way back when you were a child, until you get all the way back to when you were maybe 3 to 5 years old. Now, the first thing people say to me is, hold on a second, I can't remember yesterday or what I had for lunch last week. How do you expect me to remember when I was 5 years old? And I'll tell you, I've worked with hundreds of clients, myself included, and my first vivid visual memory, I can tell you, was I was about 5 years old, and I was in a play. And I was a wizard, and I remember putting this oven together in my – this is cardboard oven we put together in my basement, and we were practicing this play, and this kid named Mark was inside the oven pushing cotton balls out of the oven. It was some magic oven. I don't remember what the name of the play is, but I can picture it. I can picture that's what – you know, that I can picture that just like it was yesterday. And that's the memory that we're looking to get back to, because that memory, when you're 3 to 5 years old – was not corrupted by anything that had happened. It was not masked over yet by things that people had done to you. Because even though your mind is an open sieve, it's just this open bucket collecting information when you're a kid, it doesn't begin to mask over and truly mask over and cover up how you're wired until you start hitting those ages of 5, 6, and 7, when you start allowing the things that your well-meaning family, your well-meaning relatives, the well-meaning society, TV, video games, everything else, until you start to allow that to cover over your wiring and change the way you see yourself, change what you think, and change what you believe.
Wow. Okay. That's good. All right. Now, within your email, you gave me 4 truths to live by. Can you give us a brief synopsis of those 4 truths? Because they're very powerful.
Sure. The first thing is you deserve to live a life of fulfillment and happiness. Now, I don't use the word deserve lightly because we live in a society that believes that's really an entitlement society nowadays, that believes they deserve everything. And I'm here to tell you, there's only one thing you truly deserve. There's one thing that God did put inside of you. There's one thing that you need to understand, is that you deserve to live a life of fulfillment and happiness. And once you find your zero point, that's what it's going to lead you to. So that's the first one. The second one is you have the power within you to co-create the life you deserve. You have the power within you to co-create the life you deserve. And I want to focus on co-create there for a second, because I've tried for my entire life to create the life by myself that I felt I deserved and I was meant to live. And I went down many, many wrong paths, and I felt that I was always out there creating, and I took all the credit on myself. So when I say co-create, what you've got to understand is that you work with God in your times of prayer, times of flexion. Remember, prayers when we talk to God, intuitions when we talk, when God talks to us. Once again, prayers when we talk to God, intuition is when he talks back to us. So you must sit there in prayer and co-create with God the life you deserve. Because once you pray, once you listen to the intuition, even if you question it, even if you believe that, even if you think it might not be the right path, I would challenge you, if it's intuition and you've prayed about it, go co-create with God the life you deserve. Number three, make each day the best day of the rest of your life. Make each day the best day of the rest of your life. And what I mean by that is simply this, is every day you can get a little bit better, and every day your goal should be for it to be the best day. Now, will it always happen? No. I'm here to tell you that you're going to have those down days. You're going to have those days where you might question your faith. You're going to have those days where you might question why everything's happening to you. You're going to have those bad days. But that's okay. And the reason I say that's okay is because if your goal is to make each day the best day of the rest of your life, then more often than not, it will be the best day of the rest of your life. And it will be a better day than yesterday. It will be a better day than the day before. Like I said, will it always work? No, I'm not here to give you 100% guarantee on that. There's some things I can give you 100% guarantee on, like God's love and that sort of thing. But that, no. But your goal has to be to make each day the best day of the rest of your life, because that sets you up for the right day mentally, physically, emotionally, and that sets you up for the best chance of success. And the last one is number four, transform your thoughts and you will improve every area of your life. In other words, what you think about controls a large portion of your life. What you focus on controls a large portion of your life. So until you change your thoughts, until you change what you think about, it might be changing from not praying to praying. It might be from praying once a day to praying twice a day, meaning you pray when you get up in the morning, God, give me strength to get through this day, make this the best day of the rest of my life. And at night, you pray, God, look, you know, I've done everything I can to live in your light today. Give me the strength tomorrow to make this a better day, and tell me overnight in my dreams, in my intuition, when my mind is free, where you want me to go and what you want me to do and how you want me to co-create this life with you. So transform your thoughts and you will improve every area of your life. Transform what you think about, how you see things, your perception, your attitude, all the things that go into your thoughts, and that I will guarantee you, it will improve every area of your life.
Wow, that's good. Okay. And that word co-create really was a huge visual in my mind, because what I thought about when you said co-create, I said, oh, he's going to say another person. But what we have to do, what you're doing, is you're building a relationship with God, so that therefore you're walking in his will, and that's where the success comes from. Because you are following the will of God, therefore you're able to experience success. That's good, Chris.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much, Alfreda. And I'll tell you, I'll be the first one to admit I've had my doubts and my questions. I mean, one of my biggest jokes is that, you know, I mean, my wife, who swore marriage was forever, came to me a couple days after the book was released and said, if you don't stop this, you know, this public speaking and this stuff you're doing, because it's been a struggle and not been successful, if you don't stop it, I'm going to leave you. And I, you know, I I had to, you know, I felt I had to stay the course, and it was ironic, you know, Alfreda, it was ironic. I was on the stage speaking at an event, and my ex-wife was back here moving half her stuff out. It was kind of a weird, like the day she gave me the ultimatum, the day the ultimatum would expire was the day I had an event. And the good news is that at that event, God told me that it might take a while, but I was in the right path, and here's how. He had another person, another attendee at the event, come up to me and say, "Chris, I'd like to book you to speak at my church." And it was God's way of saying, "Look, this is gonna get a lot worse before it gets better. But I'm showing you, you came to do the right thing." Was there a time that I wish my wife would have my now ex-wife would have stayed with me? Yes. Was there a time I tried to save it? Yes. Was there a time that I questioned God? Yes. There was a day I'll never forget. I sat on this couch, I looked up, and I went, "Okay, I'm done. This is, you know, guess what, God? I trusted you, but this ain't getting any better. I now have my crisis of faith." And, you know, it took all of about 10 minutes for me to go, "Okay, now I've got it out. Now, okay, let's do it. What do we got to do now, God? This is..." So I did, you know, I did have my crisis of faith, which I believe everybody who walks in faith at some point is allowed to have, because things in life get tough. And before we get to your next question, just one thing I want to say is, if you're struggling with that right now, if you're listening to my voice and struggling, you're listening to my voice for a reason, you're listening to Alfreda's show, you know, the Dr. Love show, you're listening to it for a purpose, you have to understand this. Everything is written in the book of life. Look, God's got 8 billion people to worry about. He's not going to sit there every single day and worry about 8 billion people. So he's got the book. He's written the book, and it's in there. Can I guarantee you it's going to be always happy? No. Can I guarantee you you're always going to understand when things are going to get better? No, but here's what I can guarantee you, that he's going to eventually one day flip the page like he's done for me, and it will get better. I do admit, though, during my walk through the walk through the valley of the shadow of death, so to speak, you know, I would look up and go, "God, can you do me a favor? This is getting real bad here. Can you just crack the page? Just even if it's not ready to go to the next page, just do me a favor. Lift the corner. Give me a peek. Give me a smidge of a peek there, just so I know that when this page does get flipped, the things will be better." So it's one of the things that I've met so many faith-based people, Alfreda, that think that they always have to believe that if they question God, if they question their faith, if they question anything, that they're bad Christians or they're not followers. And I go, no, you don't understand. It's okay to question. That's why you've got free will. But once you're done, realize it's in the book of life and go, "Okay, you know, okay, I got my breath back. Now let's keep walking." You know, it's kind of like being in the desert, and every now and then you get the oasis that has one bottle of water in, and you go, "Okay, this isn't going to last me for my entire life, but if I drink this one bottle of water, I can continue to walk, and I can continue to follow the path, and I can continue to move forward, and I can continue to do what I'm meant to do." And then and I just have to trust that before I am completely dehydrated, that there's going to be another oasis, that God's going to put another bottle of water that's just going to get me to the next step until I finally get to the, you know, to the sea or to the ocean or to the, you know, the freshwater sea, I should say, you know, because if you got to a saltwater sea or a saltwater ocean, you'd be in big trouble because you can't drink the water. So you got to understand that you might have challenges, but what I will guarantee you is this, is once you find your zero point, even if it doesn't happen overnight, like it did for me, it will happen for you.
That's right. And Chris, I'm going to, before I ask you this other question, because, wow, you're just amazing, and I see all these visuals, I want you to tell the listeners how God has blessed you with your speaking engagements. How many engagements per year do you have because you're stepping out on faith, because you're being obedient? You lost the most precious thing to you, which is your wife, but the Lord, you obeyed the Lord. How did that pay off for you?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's just been amazing, because here's what I will say. Before I figured out how I was wired, and before I, you know, when I, after I stopped forcing down a particular path, opened up and listened, just said, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. I mean, I went from speaking, you know, if I was lucky if I was speaking once or twice a year. You know, now, like, today's a great example. I've got this, and I've got another speaking, you know, I've got another speaking engagement later tonight that I'm doing. So I'm speaking and touching audiences that I would never have touched before. You know, I do, you know, web shows on a weekly basis now. I'm building a society and working with other faith-based. There are so many doors that are open up. I mean, I get so excited. As you can hear, I mean, I get, it's funny because if you can picture me now, we're just on the phone, you can just picture me in front of a couple thousand people. I get a little ramped up. One day I'm going to go down. One day, you know, in the process, maybe I'll hit Joel Osteen up and say, hey, Joel, just let me come out and just do something on the stage. So, you know, but the whole point is that, you know, I get this energy. So, and it's from God. I mean, this is where, and this is, here's the thing of it, you know, other than the blessing, I mean, this energy you feel, it's funny because I'm sitting here and I'm actually like dancing at this point because of the energy I have. And this is when you find what you were meant to do, this is how you know it. You start to get the tingle. You start to get like the feeling of the Holy Spirit, that kind of charge you get inside of you. It's funny, I remember when I was a kid, when I went to church as a kid, every time I went to a Lutheran church and every time the pastor would talk about the Holy Spirit, receive the Holy Spirit, I would sit there and I would actually feel this energy come over me and these kind of tingles come over my body. And that's the same feeling I feel now when I'm on message and when I'm in front of a great audience. And that's what I want to share with everybody. I mean, that's the blessings that God will give you. When you co-create, when you find your zero point, when you find how you're wired and you work to co-create what you're supposed to do with God, that's the type of peace, that's the type of energy, that's the type of happiness He'll give you. Now let me say one more thing before we go on to the next question. You know, people might say, well, look, of course you have a lot of energy. You're a public speaker. You're doing speaking engagements. You're touching people's lives. What if I just want to be a plumber? And I said, you know what? First of all, it's not just. It's you want to be a plumber. A plumber serves and helps people, fixes people's faucets and fixes people's houses in their time of need. And I know people who love to do it. I know, you know, I was watching TV there. I love watching certain TV just because that's the way I learn. And there was this whole family they were interviewing where everyone in the family was a plumber. Even the daughter was studying to be a plumber. And they were extremely happy about it. And that's the point, is that's the thing that God put inside of them to be the best at, to be what, you know, to do the most good in this world. And you could tell by the looks on their faces that they were happy to do it. So it doesn't matter if you're a public speaker reaching hundreds and thousands of people a day, a week, a month, a year, or somebody who is in the service trades, somebody who's a CEO of a company, somebody who's a radio show host like yourself, Alfreda, somebody who's in the military. I got a cousin in the military. Somebody who's in the school system. I had an aunt who was a teacher. Once you find that zero point, you're going to have that energy. It's what's going to keep you going, and you're going to feel that blessing. You're going to just watch the blessings over time when you walk in that path come to you.
Mm-hmm. Well. You know, and as you were speaking, I promise I'm going to this next question. As you were speaking, I was like, I could see you on a stage, and I'm sitting there listening to you. Wow, you have a lot of energy and a lot of powerful knowledge. Just excellent. Okay, I'm going to go to my next question. How is being wired related to success?
Yeah, it is the key. It's the thing that without it, success, if you ever do get lucky enough to achieve success without understanding how you're wired, you're going to be one of the very, very few, and you might just stumble into it. The point is God has wired you for a certain thing, and when you figure out what it is, it makes success much easier to achieve. Now, and I will say it makes it quicker, and I was going to pause for a second and say, look, when I talk about easier and quicker, I don't mean overnight with no friction. What I mean is if it would have taken you 25 years to be a success or 30 years to be as successful without understanding how you're wired, if you even got there, it'll take 15 or 10 or 5. You know, if it would have taken you $1 million to if you had some basic understanding of how you wired, but not really, and it would have taken you $1 million to be a success, it might take $100,000 to be a success. If it would have taken you, once again, weeks and months, it might take days. It's something that most people misconstrue it, because we're such an immediate gratification society. Most people think that, hey, once I find my zero point, overnight I'm a success, and I'm here to tell you that's the first step. You know, you find your zero point, and then you begin to co-create, and you figure out what how you can use it, what you want to do. You might need to go back to school. You might need to overcome some other fears. You might need to invest in yourself and grow. You might need to get a coach. You might need to get a mentor. You might need to join, if you want to become a speaker, you might need to join Toastmasters. You know, it's something that, do not confuse natural ability with what you were born to do. And here's what I mean by that. I was fortunate enough to be blessed with a couple of natural talents. One was bowling. Yes, round ball, 16 pounds, three fingers in the hole, bowling. One was computers. And, gee, I think one might have been what we're doing today. I don't know, just kind of a guess. In all seriousness, so I believe I was blessed with three God-given talents. Now, I thought I was going to be a professional bowler all my life, and actually that was the course I was on until I hurt myself, tore my wrist out, had some injuries. Yes, I injured myself bowling. Maybe we talk about that on another show. People usually laugh and crack their head and go, it's a very intense sport. Talk to me, I'll tell you all about it. So I injured myself bowling and decided not to go to the school, the college I was accepted to, which was the number one bowling school in the nation, and that changed the whole trajectory of my life. Now, I did end up getting into computers. In fact, one of the companies I run now actually also deals with speaker websites and coaches' websites. We build them, make people, get people found on the Internet, that sort of thing. There's a but there. But even though I was blessed with three natural talents, there was only one thing I was born to do. There's only one thing that's in that seed of my zero point, and that's what we're doing right now, and that's to inspire, empower, and transform people's lives. That's to speak. That's to transfer this knowledge. That's to lift people up. That's to get people over the hump. That's to give you that little bit of energy that's going to last one more day until you can get there. That's that little bit of pep. It's kind of like when your tank is on empty, I want to be that 1% that gives you that extra 1 gallon of fuel that's going to make it to the next gas stop so that you can figure out, okay, how can I now get home? To just help people build, like I said, share and lead them back to God, lead them back to their zero point. You know, for the longest time, I thought I was supposed to teach people leadership, and that's because I was a leader every place I went. But what I figured out was that I was a leader every place I went because I was bullied as a kid, and I never wanted to be bullied again. So my brain was disregarding what God had put inside of me and was saying, okay, I'm going to be a leader because I don't want to be bullied again. And what I didn't realize and what I didn't understand until I had suffered a lot of loss and everything else was that this was what I was meant to do. That if you're a great leader, I'm meant to inspire, empower, and transform you, and then I can take and teach you leadership skills. But I wasn't meant to teach people leadership skills as a lead-in. I was meant to do this, and this is what, you know, this was my zero point, and this is what God had put inside of me to do. And my really defining moment, and I'll finish this up quick, but my defining moment in this, you know, and I'm going to slow down for a second, and I'm stumbling through because I want people to hear and listen to understand me, how they can really start to know if they've hit on something and go and even continue to go down the path, is this. I was at an event. I was with other coaches and speakers and people in the personal growth industry, and I had got the intuition that I was supposed to teach people how they were wired and that was going to lead people to success. So I sat at a table and I told this to a lot of other people in the personal growth industry, and the reaction I got was very negative because they were still living in their old methodologies, their old paradigms, and they were saying, no, you're limiting people and you're stopping people from being a success. And immediately, Alfreda, immediately I started pushing back against them, and I started forcing back against saying no. and started fighting for the position. And it wasn't a fight. I wasn't angry. I wasn't defensive. It was just, it was like God was there saying, okay, you're in the right place. You don't have to be defensive. Just continue to explain the position and continue to, I'll say, argue against the, you know, argue for your position. That's when I knew I was on to something, and that's what really started to change. And that's when I really went, okay, I've got to do a deep dive into this whole wired thing, because, you know, this is what I meant to teach people.
Wow. Okay.
So before you, I was going to say real quick, before you ask the question, in case people didn't get the point there, the point is, when you are confident in defending a position that seems contrary to what everybody else says and contrary to what you've believed before, you have a good indication that you may be down the right path and finding out how you're wired, or at least understanding your values much better.
Great. Okay. Wow. And I think you said something very important when you said that when you introduced your vision that you had already co-created with the Lord and listened to the intuition in which you said earlier, then you kept on. You didn't stop because of negative comments. You pressed on, which is just a testimony within itself, because we need to keep pressing, although some people may be negative about the vision that the Lord has given you. And you don't really see immediate results, like you said, but you know that that's what the Lord wants you to do. That's good, Chris.
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Who inspired you to write, and why is writing good therapy?
Interesting. I'm laughing because I've never really thought about this question, but in the end, the first thing that comes to my mind is God. And here's why I say that, because one of my friends and mentors is John Maxwell. He's written 70-plus books. He's a great guy. He's,
yes,
you know, an amazing guy. In fact, I'm actually a founding partner in his coaching, teaching, and public speaking certification program. If anybody wants to know more, they can feel free to reach out to me. But so I get mentored by John and his people on a regular basis, and it's an amazing experience. Unfortunately, I can't really say John inspired me to write, which is terrible. I almost wish I could. But here's why. When I tried to write many, many times and many, many moons ago, I never could get past having two or three sentences. So I could never – I'd write two or three things, and it was just – it would be, okay, that's it. And so I never – I never thought of myself as an author. I never thought of actually writing a book because I had given up. I never thought of – so I never opened up for anybody else's inspiration. And that's why I'm pausing, saying it has to be God, because I had the intuition that I needed to write a book and start to get some of my thoughts out there. Now, I will say this. There's a methodology I use, or a saying I use, called a feather in the 2x4. God's going to do two things for you if you're not moving in the right direction. First, he's going to tickle you with a feather, and that's a little nudges. That's kind of the words you'll hear from society. Sometimes if you're in a job, it might be a layoff. It might be as bad as that. But then he's going to come up and hit you upside the head with a 2x4 if you don't listen. And or maybe on the tuchus, it depends on how hard your head is. If you got a concrete head like me, he just whacks you upside the head. Maybe it's on the bum. It's he's going to hit you with a 2x4. For me, it happened to be getting a second layoff and not being able to get back into my previous profession until I started taking a hard look and realizing. And then the second 2x4 came with the whole leadership thing. But that's a topic for a whole nother. A whole other show. So if I look back, I believe God had thrown me the feathers by listening that everybody I talked to would say, "You got to write a book. When they heard some of my ideas before the Wired and what went into creating the Secret Blueprint for More. And eventually, like I said, I you know, I just sat down, got in front of something creative, and I have no clue other than saying God, you know, God led me in that direction. I have no clue what made me open up Microsoft PowerPoint, because everybody looks at me and goes, now, wait a minute, Microsoft PowerPoint, the presentation is over. I go, yeah, I'm telling you, I still have a copy. One day, you know, when one day I'm going to actually print it out, and I'll probably sell it as, you know, I'll probably sell it at auction, like, you know, here you go, and we'll donate the money to church or something and say, here you go, here's how I created my first book. But I guess the short answer, you know, I cannot pick one worldly person that provided an inspiration. I can say a lot of people suggested it, but I would have to say it was intuition from, you know, from God.
Wow. That is very humbling. That's good. And, Chris, I am also interested in your institution, in your company. So if you could send me some information, I would love that.
Excellent.
Okay. All right, and the next question that I have is there anything else you would like to speak on that was not mentioned in the interview?
Okay, do you have about, do we have another couple of days?
Oh, yeah, we have, you know, we have like an hour and 15 minutes left. Go ahead. We're not in a rush.
Yeah, I was
gonna
say,
great stuff.
You know,
I'm taking notes.
Well, thank you, Alfreda. You know, it's... And part of that, I just have to reiterate, you can tell by the passion of my voice, this is, you know, this is what I love to do. And, you know, one of the things is that, and it goes back to the zero point. And I guess one of the things that I really want people to understand, and in fact, if you'll indulge me for a minute, I want to tell a story or two. And the first story is, and I'm going to slow down a little bit here, the first story is really about my trials and tribulations, because in a non-defensive way, you hear a lot, I want to say this, people who are listening to this episode and this talk today may say, look, every public speaker says that they went through some horrible thing, and that's what gave them their platform. And I will tell you, the ones I know personally, yeah, they you know, anybody I know personally who says that, yeah, they did. There might be some people using that as kind of a hook to get people, but, you know, I just got to go out and trust people. So I want to tell people my story a little bit of, you know, of what I went through. And I'm going to, you know, I can be very, very long with this, so I'm going to kind of keep it medium to short length, because I really can get really long. Interesting thing is that when I was young, I'm even going to go back. When I was 5 years old, as you heard, I was an actor. And throughout my entire high school, my young adult years, and my early adult years, I was acting, entertaining, disc jockeying, doing all that stuff, having fun at it, really starting to make a name for myself. But I was never uber successful, so of course I never had the big money. And let's face it, you know, you need money to live. So towards the end of my first stint in doing this type of thing, I decided that, you know, because it just wasn't paying well, I decided to take a detour. And the first detour I took was to grab eclectic experiences, as I call them, which meant doing everything from working as a child care worker to working as an armed security officer to owning a storefront business. To let's see, what else? I ran a used car. I ran or co-ran a buy here pay here car lot. Worked for an amusement park. You know, I mean, it's kind of ran the gamut. I didn't travel the world, but I, you know, and it's interesting because I was not listening to what God wanted me to do. I just said, you know what, I'm going to go out and collect these experiences. See, fast forward a few years, and I was still dead broke. I was working two jobs and not being able to make ends meet. And then I took the next detour in my life, which was to jump into information technology, start off on a help desk, managing a crew of second-level support technicians. And that's when I started to get back into computers and started to understand that because we're talking mid-90s here by this time. And it was something that I knew it would be important, but I never saw myself doing it long-term as far as staying in IT and doing that stuff. I always saw myself back in management. In fact, I would fight against getting certified in a lot of IT related things because I didn't want it. Now you notice I'm saying I a lot. Once again, wasn't kind of keeping my ears open or my mind open, and I still felt I knew what was best. You know, it's kind of the little bit of arrogant streak, and you know, I hope I'm a little more humble today than I was back then. But then again, by mentioning it probably means I'm not. But you know what? Here's the other thing. I'm gonna take a quick digression. This is me. Love me where I'm at. This is what I do. I do believe everybody should be humble, or everybody should be as humble as God made them to be. And I believe that some people God really made to be not to really be humble. And here's what I mean by that. If you look at some people who are popular and successful, who are the least humble people in the world, if God didn't make them to be a little arrogant, if he didn't make them to have a little bit of an ego, if he didn't make them to have that, they wouldn't be successful. I mean, you look at somebody who's truly arrogant and egotistical, and they're not successful, and they keep complaining about why aren't they successful. Well, guess what? It's because you weren't meant to be that way. But if God had meant you to be that way, then you'd be successful. And that's it. That's one of those difficult concepts that I dig into that people go, it doesn't make too much sense right up front. It's like, it does if you believe everything is written in the book of life, and if you believe that God's planned everything out, and if you believe that if you follow the path that's planned, that things just work out for you. So back to my detour. I detoured into information technology, and I did achieve some level of success. By the time I left, by the time I hit my second layoff, I was a senior director for a Fortune 500 company, making six figures plus, had a big house close to 3,000 square feet, which is big. You know, let's face it. I mean, there's, you know, houses nowadays are getting smaller. I mean, it might not be 6,000 or 7,000 square feet, but you know, by the time I got my second layoff, I had just closed on a $500,000 brand new construction in the middle of Long Island, New York, which people will go, wait a minute, you could find new construction. That's a whole other topic for a whole other time. But the whole point is I had achieved what I thought was a great level of success. And then I got laid off. And I said, you know what? I've achieved the success. This is going to be easy peasy, nice and easy, get right back in and go right back to where I was. And it wasn't. And I would get to the final interview and something would happen. And I couldn't get over the hump. The best one was towards the end of the final round interviews, was where I went to a company. They flew me and my ex-wife down to Florida. We went on a house hunting trip. I mean, this was shake hands, we'll see you on Monday type of thing. So I call them back on Monday, can't get a hold of them. Call them back a little bit later, come to find out. And eventually call back and they say, you know, we've chosen to go another direction. And I eventually come to find out that after I left, between the time I left and the time that they were going to make the final decision, a local candidate came on the market that they didn't have to relocate. They interviewed him within a day, and they decided to go with him. Now, I'm going, that was my 2x4. I didn't realize it at the time, but that was the other 2x4 because it was the perfect job. It was the perfect job in the perfect area. Literally, I'm telling you something, Alfreda, if you took my resume and you took the job description, you could have just taken the job description, I put my resume there, taken my name off, and it would have been, it would have matched. So that should have been my last 2x4. It took me a couple of months to kind of cope and realize that I needed to find a different direction. And when I did, when I eventually did, I joined John Maxwell as a founding partner in his coaching, teaching, and public speaking certification program. And that's when I started to get back on the path. I wasn't on fully the right path, but at least instead of going, I'll say, perpendicular to the path, I was now kind of maybe going at a 45-degree angle, not necessarily parallel, but it was kind of at a 45-degree angle, working my way back to parallel. And here's why I say a 45-degree angle. Because at first, I used my association with John in an attempt to show future employers that I was getting, that I was improving myself, and an attempt to show future employers that I was improving myself. So it was this fallacy. I was still living in the I was going to get another job. After a few months, I had to make a very, very difficult decision. Either start a business and start getting closer to my true path, or continue to accept my unemployment. Now, I was getting unemployment from a state that if you even worked a half hour of one day on starting a business, you had to declare or do anything that might at some future point generate money, you had to declare that as a day of work, even if it was Saturday or Sunday. So in other words, you couldn't even it was so restrictive that they didn't even give you a Saturday and Sunday off. You had to be working 7 days a week in order to try and find a job or do something. And I was all the way up until I sat and looked at my now ex-wife and I said, look, you're not working, I'm not working. Our only income is this unemployment. If I start this business, I've got to give it up. And at that point, she said, "Go for it." You know, at that point, and this was a few years before the divorce. You know, at that point, it was go for it. I believe in you. I think you're going to be a success at it. So did, gave up the unemployment, so that was a huge decision because, let's face it, I'm not going to go into exact numbers, but everybody listening can kind of guess. I was making six figures plus. It's not like I was making minimum unemployment. So it's not like unemployment was, you know, it's funny. I really joke around and go, you know, people making six figures plus are what gives are what leads people to say people on unemployment, you know, don't want to go back to work. And it's like, no, we really want to, but guess what? Unemployment is really healthy when you've been making that much money for a long time, I must admit. So made the decision, got back closer to the path. And by that point, I was leading back towards being parallel because I'd gone back in the direction of being a coach, being a mentor, being a speaker, and doing this, and doing what I'm doing now. But I thought it was supposed to be leadership, and that was because I didn't understand how I was wired. I didn't understand the fact that, I wanted to be in leadership and I wanted to teach people leadership because I had been bullied. Now, I can give you countless stories of how I was bullied as a kid. Some better than some, worse than others, okay? I won't go into all of them, but what I can tell you is this. I can tell you times where I was on the playground and kids would rip a hat off my head and break my glasses. I never forget a time when somebody came up and tried to bully me, and this is how smart I was as a kid. You know, I had book smarts, but other than that, I wasn't too bright as a kid because a kid came up and wanted to fight me for my lunch money. Now, I had my brown bag lunch in my hand. I'm going to repeat this. He wanted to fight me for my lunch money, and I had my brown bag lunch in my hand. So, first of all, had no lunch money. So instead of walking away, I did the only smart thing I could do, which was took the only thing I had in my hand, which was my brown bag lunch, and I threw it at him. So guess what? I now not only had no lunch money, but I had no lunch. That was a brilliant move on my part.
Oh, wow.
You know, I mean, it was just like, what were you thinking? You know, it's funny because I'm quite sure that if God was watching that moment, he went, you know what? I gave you brains, but you got to use them there, kid, because I don't know what you were thinking. Lunch? No lunch.
Wow.
So hungry for a day there, big guy. So, you know, but, you know, as another example, I played football. Now, football is a team sport. It is people bonding together. And I was, you know, I was a tackle on offense and defense. So I protected the quarterback. Me and the quarterback should have been good friends until I was walking away from him one day and he yelled my name and threw a football and it happened to nail me right in the throat.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if he really meant to hit me in the throat with it. Maybe if I'd had better hands, I could have caught it. But, you know, it was like that. Or it was a time that I would, you know, I used to love to break dance. Yes, I grew up in the, you know, in the 70s. So, yes, my voice might sound not that old, but, yeah, I'm that old.
Hey, I'm with you.
And I used to, there you go. So I used to like to break dance, and kids would ask me all the time, "Hey, Chris, can you do a couple of moves for us?" Sure, not a problem. Do a couple of moves, and they'd make fun of me. And I, in my smart self, figured eventually I would get good enough that they would stop making fun of me. That wasn't until these group of kids said, hey, you know, do you want to show us some moves? Yeah, sure. Got down the floor, did a couple of moves, and one of the kids ran up and kicked me, literally mm-hmm. kicked me in the middle of school while I was on the floor doing some breakdancing moves, and that was the last time. So here's one of the reasons I bring up these bullying stories. In fact, let me tell you at least one more. So back in the 70s, there was this wrestler. In fact, he's kind of made a comeback named Hulk Hogan. And I was a big Hulk Hogan fan, big wrestling fan. And he had this shirt on that said American Made. And this is before the days of buying merchandise and everything. So I went I begged my adopted parents. Like, I'm adopted, I'll tell you. If we have time for more stories, I'll tell you that story too. But I'm adopted. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I begged them to let me go to the Army Navy store and get an American Made shirt on. And finally, they relented. So we went. We got this thing said American Made, and I wore that shirt into school. Dang, I was proud. I'm walking around like, you know, hey, this is, you know, I'm thinking I'm. I honestly, I thought it was kind of cool, but you know, at least I was happy. So I get into school, and a kid walks up to me, and this is what he says to me, Alfreda. He says, if that's made in America, I don't want to be an American. I went, wow. I think I was saying seventh or eighth grade, something like that. I didn't know completely how to react to it, but let's just say I wasn't too happy about that. And it's funny because people listening might think, wow, you know, being made fun of for a T-shirt. But what you got to understand is this. What happened was a culmination of things, and it was a culmination of these verbal things and some physical things that masked over my wiring. Like, let me give you another story. So I told you I played football, and I was overweight when I was a kid. So I had to lose 10 pounds before the start of the season to be even able to play. And I was 100 pounds at that point, so I had to lose one-tenth of my body weight in the span of, I don't know, it was a month or 2 months, something like that, to be able to play. And I did it. I worked hard. I cut my calories. I'll never forget that I come home every night from playing football and instead of eating a big dinner or anything, I'd have a grilled cheese sandwich and I think a Gatorade. That was kind of my dinner every night. So I worked my butt off to lose the weight. And I'll never forget when they weighed me in the first time. Let's just say we had to take the pads and pretty much everything else off that we could to get me to legal weight. But at least I did it. I lost the weight. And I kept it off all season. They had to weigh me before every game. And it was just like, oh, my God. You know, it wasn't something where you lose the weight and you're good for the rest of the season. Just put on as much as you want. It's like every week I had to get weighed in. So I lost it. I kept it off. And the mothers from the team were having this end-of-the-year picnic, and one of them said to me, hey, Chris, you know, you're going to come to the picnic? And I said, I can't go to that picnic. You're going to tempt me with all the French fries and the hot dogs and with all the good stuff that I love to eat. And, you know, it's just going to undo all this hard work I put in. Well, a newspaper picked up the quote. I got a little bit of recognition for it. And at the end of the season, they gave me this award called, are you ready for this? It was the Willpower Award. Now, for those of you thinking the Willpower Award was some big trophy or something, no, it wasn't. It was a white T-shirt with a sticker on the back that said Willpower, but it was the Willpower Award. Never mind, it was a white T-shirt with a sticker on the back that said Willpower. That's okay. I was proud of it. So I wore it in the school, and I was sitting at lunch, and three kids came up behind me. And they said, Willpower, huh? And I said, yeah, I got this for losing weight and doing all this stuff in football. I said, oh, that's nice. And one of the kids proceeded to take this sticker and rip it right off my back. So what that taught me was two things. It taught me that losing weight and success were both going to be painful. Two things, losing weight and success were both going to be painful. As a result, I can't tell you how many times the fear of success has stopped me from doing something. In fact, there was a very infamous time in my life where I didn't show up for a disc jockeying gig that I was supposed to show up for, and later called and had just and made up a you know a a very bad excuse why I didn't show up. That gig could have led to a lot more. Thank goodness the person I was substituting for, I believe, didn't see any harm out of it, but it ruined our relationship. In fact, I will say this, that guy is still on television today, and his son is on radio. And you guys, unless you're living in Pennsylvania, I'm going to guess you probably don't know this person, so don't even try. So everybody listening, don't even try and guess. But the fact of the matter is that my fear of success led to me making very, very bad choices. My fear of losing weight led me to be 300 pounds at one point. So I got all the way up to 300 pounds. I then finally did something. I said, I got to do something. I went down to 200, but because I never got over the fear of weight loss, I went all the way back up to 278. Mm-hmm. I then thought I was going to live the rest of my life as a heavyset guy, as the fat guy, so to speak, and I kind of resigned myself to that, and then I kind of didn't, so I wanted to go get bariatric surgery, and I had gotten approved for it, and I never got it because my now ex-wife was too stressed out. She thought I was going to die on the operating table, so I said, okay, fine, I'll live the rest of my life as a fat guy. I lost a few pounds here and there, and eventually got back down to about 235, I think it was. And this was I'm skipping way, way ahead and saying back in December 2011,2010. I don't even remember at this point. Where you were in 2014? Yes, December 2011. I didn't get my year straight. It's what happens. This is what happens when you lose a year of your life to a divorce. I can explain that in a second. But here's the thing, and this all comes to a point. So, people, I hope you love this story, but this is all coming to a point. So in December 2011, I was about 235 pounds, and I made the decision. I said, look, I have a much more powerful story to tell on stage, and I can affect more people's lives if I'm skinnier versus being heavier, because what's on the inside and what's on the outside will match. See, I've always had this energy. I've always had this type of personality. But before, people thought it was just because I was heavy and I was trying to be like Chris Farley, or I was trying to be a comedian and I was trying to overcome my weight, and they didn't understand that it was me. And I would always have this weird fear and this feeling, and people would always be thrown off a little bit. So I said, look, I'm going to jump on a program. I'm going to see if it works. I'll try it for 30 days. If it doesn't work, no big deal. Well, in the span of the first 30 days, I lost 20 pounds. I never looked back. And over the span of, I don't know, it was like 7-8 months, something like that, I lost a total of 80 pounds. I mean, I got all the way down to about 152, 155 pounds. I mean, I was skinny. I looked like Steve Jobs at the end of his life. I really did. I got too skinny. Mm-hmm. So then I decided to put some weight back on, got up to, put about 20 pounds back on, and started actually looking healthy again. But, and here's the bad part, is going through the divorce and everything else, I found out that I hadn't gotten completely rid of my emotional eating and my emotional attachment to food. I'd fixed everything else, but when I was put under severe emotional stress, I turned back to food. So, yeah, I ended up gaining another 25 pounds. And I finally said, you know what, this is, enough is enough. I now understand, because I can think about it and I can rationalize it and I can see it. I can have that emotional awareness of it. So I know I'm an emotional eater, so I've got to fix that. And I did. And now I'm biking twice a day. I've lost most of the weight again. I'm almost back down to my 175, which is 170 to 175 is my ideal weight. So here's one of the things I want you to take away from that whole big story. First of all, at the end I said about perception. When you are in the middle of stress, when you are in the middle of the worst times of your life, you are not always able to understand why you got there, and sometimes you have to come out. But if you're also busy And if you're not looking for it, you'll never be able to understand it. And you will ride this roller coaster over and over and over again. Because I thought when I lost all that weight that I was going to be good. And I thought I had fixed everything. And I hadn't. Mm-hmm. I hadn't fixed the emotional part. So, you know, when you're going through the struggle and the turmoil, it's okay to start thinking, but realize that eventually you have to quiet your mind. You have to come out of the turmoil a little bit. Plus, you can't get so wrapped up in everything else in the day-to-day life that you don't think. And that's where prayer in the morning, prayer in the night comes in. That's where allowing your subconscious to co-create things with God at night comes in, because you have to slow down. Now, this is going to be very counterintuitive to people, but I can't stress strongly enough. Just like John says, sometimes you got to give up to go up. Sometimes you have to slow down and listen and quiet your mind and listen. And that's what we get so caught up in. I was so caught up in business. I was so caught up in trying to save my marriage. I was so caught up in everything that it wasn't until I lost everything. And I'll never forget the day. There was one day, Alfreda, I sat on this couch and I took one foot off. And I put it back on, and I said, woohoo, I am done for the day. That was my only success, and I went back to bed. That was partly the lowest point of my life in the last 18 months. But what that did, and this is what I want your listeners, I gave you a huge story. One of the things I want your listeners to understand is this. You have to figure out a way to quiet your mind. You have to figure out a way to listen with your mind, with your heart, with your body, with your soul, with your spirit, with your subconscious, with everything. You have to find that way to do it. Now, here's the thing of it. Most people will, you know, people will come to me all the time and they'll say, well, look, I need to make money tomorrow. And I'll tell you, I'll look at them and say, look, I guarantee you won't make, if you're not making money today, I guarantee you won't make money tomorrow if you haven't quieted your mind and figured out your zero point in your DNA. Because if you're doing the same things tomorrow as you're doing today, you're never going to get any place, because you aren't any place today. This is not something where if I just fight harder, I'm going to get there. This is something that if you're fighting in the wrong direction, it doesn't matter how hard you run and how hard you walk. If you're walking north and you're supposed to be going south, run as fast as you want. Guess what? You are never going to get to your destination if your destination is south. So quiet your mind. It's one of the things that you know, and I don't begrudge her. She's living, as far as I know, a great life, and she's moved on and I moved on. One of the things I never did, because I was under so much pressure from myself to support my wife, to pay for the house, to pay for the mortgage, to do everything, I never quieted my mind to figure out if I was going in the right direction or not. And part of it was because I felt the responsibility to my now ex-wife to go out and try and make money the next day. Well, guess what? If I would have just quieted my mind, and I'm going to cry. I got to calm myself down because I'm ready to cry here. Because if I would have just quieted my mind a year and a half, 2 years before I did, things would be totally different. I have to take peace and take grace in the fact that I must have been meant to go through it, and this is what was meant to happen. It must have been written in the book of life. I hope anyway. And that's my saving grace. That's what I have to you know, hang my hat on. But I tell you right now, if you're listening to my voice, that it's time for you to quiet your mind. It's one of the things you have to do, because without quieting your mind, you're never going to be able to hear what and get your intuition. You're never going to be able to hear what God has out there for you and what He's put out there, and you're never going to be able to find your zero point. I'm telling you from experience. I can't tell you how many times I'd wake up in the morning and I'd go to a networking event, or I'd go to this event or that event, because I was like, if I'm doing something, then you know I'm doing something, and it's gonna work. Or I'd look online, I'd read another book, I'd read another course, I'd listen to a webinar, I'd listen to a teleseminar, I'd go to a free course, I'd do this, I'd sign up for a mailing list. I can't tell you how many mailing lists I was on, all these things I was on, because I thought that was what I was supposed to do. I thought that if I just kept doing and working harder and harder and harder, if I kept doing it like that, that it would achieve success. And I figured at least if it didn't, I would be satisfying my now ex-wife, and I would be, you know, at least letting her know that I was trying something. Mm-hmm. And if I would have just quieted my mind and if I'd have sat down with her and explained and said, look, something's not working. I need to figure out a different way. So you're going to have to, give me some time, and you've got to understand that, I don't know how much time that's going to be, but you've got to give me some time to figure this out. Because once I figure it out, we're going to go, we're going to go like gangbusters, and we're going to do everything we can. Then we're going to go in the right direction, and we're going to go where, if we're supposed to be going south, we're going to drive south, and we're going to go, and we're going to get there. We're going to get there a lot quicker. If we know we're supposed to be going south, and we go south, we're going to get there a lot quicker than if we're driving north.
Right.
So once again, quiet your mind. And to finish the thought on quieting your mind, one thing I would recommend you do is every night before you go to bed, when you say your prayers, think about something that you want help on overnight that you want to co-create with God. Because when you're sleeping, your conscious mind is shut off and your subconscious is an open book. It's an open tablet. And it's a lot easier for God to walk through an open door than it is a door that's closed and locked. Now, yes, he's God, and if he really wants to get through the closed and locked door, he's going to get through. The problem is he's got so many people right now with open doors that he'd rather go through an open door than somebody who's gonna fight him. So open that door. Be receptive and sit there and be receptive to getting that intuition, and then follow it, the next day. And here's one of the things. Let me give you one other thing. I want to give your listeners so much. It's kind of, this is where Alfreda, you open the door. you open the door for me to do this. So I'm walking through. This is me on the stage.
Yeah.
So here's one
thing.
Other things. Well, thank you. So here's one of your things I want to give your listeners. I want to give your listeners the concept of a touchstone, because once you get the intuition from God, once you know the path, you need something else to make sure that you're going down the right path, and you need something. Most people, myself included, need something that they can look at on a daily basis to keep them on task and to keep them on path. It's a concept I call a touchstone. And a gentleman I know, Ken MacArthur, he runs Impact Live. He's out to make an impact in the world too. He had reminded me and gave me at least part of this concept. So I've got to give him at least a little bit of credit. But the point is it's called a touchstone. And what it is what are the five things I'm going to do every single day that are in alignment with my purpose and everything else, my DNA, my wiring, my passion, everything, all that, to push that forward? What are the five things I'm going to do every day? Now, most people, when they start this off, they say, well, does it have to be business or personal? I say, look, it's any five things that are going to push forward your mission in life, your purpose in life, your happiness, any five things, because this is a tough concept for a lot of people to get. So some people say, well, fine, exercise is one of the things. It's not going to help my business, but it's going to help make me happier. Fine, put exercise on. Some people say writing. Like I've got, one of my best friends, right now we're actually co-hosting an event, a simulcast event with John in our location is going to be in Virginia. There's probably a location down in Texas where you're at. It's called L2. If you go to l2.johnmaxwell.com, you should be able to find more information about it. I believe that's the website address. If not, connect with me, hit me up. I can get you some information. Point is that one of the things that we talk about all the time is touchstones. And one of the things that we've created is this nice small little touchstone that pretty much says L2, writing and networking. So in other words, on a daily basis, we focus on L2. We focus on, somebody focuses on writing and somebody focuses on networking. My touchstone goes a little bit deeper. I mean, I focus on L2 every day. I focus on another society that I run called Professional Practice Builders Society, where we help coaches and other professional practice builders understand how they're wired, understand how their ideal clients are wired, and then create video-based content marketing campaigns to get their message splashed all over the internet and drive traffic back to their site so they can make money, which in the end, all this is great, got to figure out a way to, unless you want to create a nonprofit, which is great, got to figure out a way to make money. So the point is this, is you know, my touchstone includes, like I said, L2, it includes the Professional Practice Builder Society, it includes exercise. I mean, I'm actually out riding a bike 2.5 hours every day. And people go, 2.5 hours? Yeah, I ride an hour and a half once, or an hour and 15 once, and an hour and 15 again. They said, where do you find time to do business and everything else? It's like, well, you wake up and you do, you know, I do the bike ride before everybody else gets up and rock and rolling for their business, and I work on business as long as I can. I figure out time at night before the sun goes down, I do another bike ride, and then I work on business until I fall asleep. And when I say business, I mean L2. I mean things like the Professional Practice Builder Society, generating content, doing videos, doing radio interviews, things like that. So the whole point is this. You create this touchstone. At the beginning, you start off with any 5 things, and then over time, as you work, as your intuition develops more, as the things you talk to, as your prayers develop more, you'll get the intuition from God, what are the 5 things that that you should do on a daily basis. John Maxwell talks about 5, and his 5 used to be, I know writing used to be 1, reading used to be 1, I believe his faith was 1. Now I have to go find the other 2 because John's talked about it before. So John does something similar, and even John, he says, look, if I only do something for 15 minutes a day, that's okay. Like as an example, if you want to be a writer and your intuition tells you you're going to be a writer, put writing down and start off writing 1 minute a day and go, look, I'm going to write for 60 seconds. I'm going to write 1 sentence. The next day, I'm going to write 2 sentences. The next day, I'm going to write 3 or 4 or 5. And you start to build momentum. So that's the key. You do your prayers. You figure out. You use your intuition to figure out what path you need to be down. You create a touchstone to keep you on that path, and then you do those for even if it's 5 or 10 minutes every day. Now, here's the other beautiful part about the touchstone. If you're like me, I got shiny object syndrome, and I love new things all the time. So if you're like me and you love new things and love different things, you might get distracted. And if you remember at the beginning of the conversation, beginning of this talk, we talked about using up your time on busy work. Here's the beautiful part about the touchstone. You put that touchstone on your computer monitor, your mirror, someplace that you will see it all day, or as much as you can, all day, every day. And then anytime somebody asks you to do something that's not on a touchstone, anytime somebody asks you to do anything, anytime that somebody comes up and wants to take it in a different direction, you look at that touchstone and go, does it match, 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 yes or no? Guess what, I'm sorry. It doesn't match these. Guess what, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Now, the beautiful part is if you've done everything you're touched on for a day, then you give yourself a little bit of a break and you say, yeah, maybe that sounds like fun. Maybe I want to go camping or hiking or something. I can do that. But if you got your 5 touchstones and you haven't done something on each one of those every single, you know, during that day, if you haven't done something and somebody wants you to do something else, you gotta look at them to say no, and it gives you the permission to say no, which we all need from time to time, because people as human beings don't want to cause conflicts and don't want to sit there and people, this is the best way to put it, people hate conflicts. Some people I know really don't like when people say yes, or when people say yes and they really mean no, like in a networking situation where they'll say, yep, we love it, and then never follow through on it. It's like, look, people don't want to cause conflicts. They just don't. So most people in a business situation, if they can't find a nice way of telling you no, will end up doing something. We'll basically say yes, even at the expense of themselves. So rather than you having to be the person of saying yes, even at the expense of yourself, this gives you a nice little thing to say. You know what? I'm sorry. These are the 5 things I got to do today, and I'm not done with these 5. So I got to kind of, do these now. There's 1 caveat. I'll give you guys 1 exemption. If you're a sports fan or something like that, or a music fan, and let's say it's Super Bowl time and your buddy walks in and goes, I've got 2 50-yard line tickets to the Super Bowl. You know what? Throw a touchdown away for a day. Go to Super Bowl. go ahead to the Super Bowl. It's okay. The whole point is the touchstone gives you that 99% of the time. There are going to be times that 1% where – Maybe your favorite band is coming around, and it's their only area appearance all year. Like I used to be heavily into Trans-Siberian Orchestra. They do a lot of great heavy metal Christmas type music. Look them up; they're a great band. It was a once a year type of thing. So yeah, I'll rearrange my schedule and not do a Touchstone if I can on that day or something like that. I'd prefer to do it, but. So you get those one thing, but for the most part, for everything else you do in your life, unless it's kind of like the dream of a lifetime, and when I mean dream of a lifetime, I don't mean watching it on TV at home. You got to do your touchstones before you watch it. So it's kind of like when you were in school, do your homework before you go out to play. I mean, it is that really that simple. Your touchstone is your homework. Here's the other interesting thing I wanted to bring up. I talked about fear of success. And people, you heard a lot of stories from me, and some people I know right now are going, man, your bullying doesn't sound as bad. I know somebody who was physically beat up and somebody who was, who was verbally abused every day of their life. Yeah, you're right. They're worse than what I went through. I get that, and I understand that. I don't mean to diminish that. For me, as a kid, these were bad enough because they changed the direction of my life. And here's what I mean. If you look at all the situations I told you about, and many more that we don't have time, that I don't have my command of time today to tell you about, what they all boiled down to was me doing something that the world didn't think, or the world or the kids in my world didn't agree with. Mm-hmm. And me being made fun of. So if you think about that, when you're on stage as a public speaker or when you're an actor or when you're an entertainer, you're always doing things that may or may not go over well with the crowd. So it took me more years than I care to count to overcome that fear of being made fun of and really that fear of success. And it changed so many things I did throughout my life. I'd get right there and then I'd sabotage myself. I mean, at this point, I will tell you that, 20 years ago, you probably should, and this I say, in all truth and sincerity, 20 years ago, you should have heard my name. 25 years ago, probably you should have heard my name, but I was afraid of success, and it always stopped me. So it has changed the trajectory of my life for the last 20 to 25 years. I mean, one of the other stories I didn't tell you is I was in the Pennsylvania Boys Choir. Pennsylvania Boys Choir is made up of a whole bunch of little boys who can sing very, very high soprano, falsetto, kind of like the Mariah Carey note, that range. Right. Travel all over the world, Japan, tour all over the land. I was in that for a while, and I remember this one rehearsal. I sat there, and I got a solo. And when I got done with the solo, the entire boys choir started laughing at me. Now, It takes a lot to be made fun of by a whole bunch of little boys who sing very high. And considering the audition process was the director auditioned every single boy, and the director was the one who chose the choir, I was kind of confident that I was a good singer. And that, that it wasn't my singing that they were laughing at. And when he wrote me 4 handwritten notes to say, please come back, I want you back in the choir, I was kind of confident that I was on the right path, that I might have been a decent singer. But my voice was so high that the boys laughed at me. Mm-hmm. Now, that should have been a nice, safe environment. But is it any wonder why I was afraid of success or afraid of going out and doing things and afraid of putting myself out there to be made fun of? Fast forward to 2012. I was blessed to share the stage with John Maxwell twice that year. And, in fact, the clips are up on YouTube. And the one clip is, I think it's the one about being inspiring and passionate. I tell the story. I tell a 3-minute version of my story of being afraid of success and being afraid of success and weight loss. I believe that's the one. And at the end, I have the crowd interact with me, and I say, you know, repeat after me, I define my moment, anything's possible, anything can happen. The one thing that I don't tell many people is that was the first time I tried that closing, and I was in front of 500 people that were my peers, and it was on the same stage John Maxwell is going to be on. Not necessarily the greatest place to try a brand new closing, because if it goes over like a dud, you've ruined it forever. I will tell you that much. But here's the thing of it. I will tell you something that I don't tell many people, and that is I prayed that morning. I did all my hard work, but I also prayed, and I said, God, I said, wherever you want me today, put me there. If you want me on the stage, put me on the stage. If you don't want me on the stage, don't be on the stage. And I was blessed to be on the stage. I do believe there's a spirit of God in the room, that he helped me get through that. But it was also where I had to finally, you know, it was co-creating once again. I had to finally take that chance, because I'll tell you something. If I didn't take the chance, they weren't going to be saying anything. It doesn't matter how much God wanted to help me at that point. Okay, if I didn't take the chance and step out and do something to overcome that fear, you know, they weren't going to be, you know, I wouldn't have got a reaction. And that was what really started me breaking. You know, I think I talk about it in there where I started to embrace success when I joined the John Maxwell team. I believe that moment on stage was when I really started to break the fear, because you can embrace success and still have a little bit of fear of success. But I think I started to finally break the chains at, you know, at that point. So that would be one of the other things I want your audience to really understand, is the fact that when I talk about co-creating, sometimes, okay, let's face it, all the times, you have to make some sort of effort. I know somebody who sits there every single day and says a rosary, I think it's 10 or 15 times a day, and prays novenas to St. Jude out the wazoo, and wants their life to change. And I guarantee you, over the last 15 years, all their life has done has got worse, because they have never done one thing to go out and do it, to go out and co-create what they want to see happen. Now, if you're there praying the rosary, saying the novenas, that is great, it's wonderful, but if you don't get off the couch and go do something about it,
right?
I'm here to tell you, nothing's going to happen. It's kind of like playing the lottery. Guess what? If you don't put the buck in the machine and get the numbers, you can't win, okay? The lottery fairy is not going to magically show up and go, here's $1 million. It just isn't
right.
Going to happen. You know, and it amazes me, Alfreda, because we know God's a loving God. We know that he wants to help everybody. We know that he's out there for peace. And when I say everybody, I do mean everybody. Everybody in this world, whether they believe in him or not, I believe he wants to help them in his own way, and within their own beliefs and everything. That's a whole topic for a really long topic on another conversation. But the point is this: if you don't make an effort to do anything, you know, it's amazing, because here's the problem that I find, or the challenge that I find with a lot of people who are faith-based and who also don't want to do anything. They just really believe that because God's omnipotent and God can do everything, that they're just going to pray long enough and he's going to make it happen. And I'm not laughing at them, because I've been there. There's a but you got to realize this. There's a reason that there's the old saying, God helps those who help themselves. Because you got to do at least a little bit yourself.
That's right.
You know, I mean, it's something that, you know, and I'll give you another quick example. I could be sitting here praying to be on radio shows like yours every single day. But if I don't, but I do. Yours is a great show. This has been an incredible experience so far. I'm sure it's going to continue. But here's the thing of it. I could be praying to be on shows like this all the time. And some people will find me. They will find my website. They will contact me and say, Chris, will you please be on my show? And I will say yes, as long as I have a slot open in my schedule. But if I don't go out and go to your site or look for people like you or look to the online services to say who needs a speaker, it's not going to happen, especially right now. Now, will there be a time yet? There's going to be a time where my schedule is so booked that I don't need to look anymore. I'm confident that that's the direction God has set for me. But until I get there, I got to continue to, you know, continue to look. And then when I get there, the thing that I have to do, and this is where, you know, let me turn this back to your audience. So here's the thing of it. First of all, if you're praying right now that God's going to help you, do me a favor, go do something. I don't care if it's even take a walk. You've already done something by listening, but just start to do something. Move yourself in the direction that you want God to help you in. Eventually, He's going to help you. It's okay. It might take a while, but eventually He's going to help you. Here's the thing of it. When you get to where you know you should be, here's what you need to do to continue to stay there and to continue to get the help from God. You got to be the best person at what you do that you know. You got to give it 100% every day, because that is what you're doing to keep, you know, that's what you're doing to stay there, so to speak. And you do that, God will help you stay there. You can't just get to a point and make it and be there and go, yeah, you know what? I've arrived. I'm going to sit on the couch all day, eat the bonbons, and just let the money roll in. And, oh, I'll just give everybody, I'm just yawning and stretching, and you know what? Maybe I'll wake up 3 hours late today. No! No! You got to keep doing it, because, you know, there's going to come a time where it's going to feel easy. When it feels easy, that's when you've got to work the hardest. But you got to work the hardest at your craft and what you've done. So once you get to the top of the mountain, do everything you can to stay there. And you know, and God will help you stay there. And also bring people along. Because I'll tell you something, being on the top is a lonely place to be if you're there by yourself. And just like at the end of the bucket list, Alfreda, have you seen the movie The Bucket List?
No, sir, I haven't.
Okay, great movie. I suggest everybody watch it. It's a tearjerker. I cried. There's a scene. Let's just put it this way: the mountain I just spoke. I don't want to ruin it for you. now I'm torn, because it's a great scene if it's right. Well, look, you watch it, you understand what I'm talking about. For the people who've seen it, you know the scene I'm talking about. And it's just a great illustration of being on the top of a mountain alone is a lonely place to be. That you got to be there. You want to bring people. You know, you want to bring people along and help lift other people up. Because, and that's if you were meant to do that. And I have to say this way. If you were meant to do that, and I will tell you this, if you're meant to be a leader, if you're meant to be successful, I guarantee you are also meant to bring people along. So as you achieve the success that you were born to be in life, in whatever field, in whatever capacity that is, if you achieve a high level of success and you have the means and the ability, you bring people along. Some people were meant to be a success at a different area, in a different stage. Some people were meant to be a success, you know, maybe at a different income level where it isn't always readily apparent that they can bring a lot of people along. Bring whoever you can along, because it's much more satisfying to have people who, to bring people along and have them be where you're, you know, where you're at. That's just a few more things. You open up the can of worms, Alfreda. That's just a few more things that I hadn't got a chance to say before. So have I sparked any? You've been listening intently for Jesus. I think I've just gone on for, it's got to be about 45 minutes.
No, that's good. This is some great information. And I want to let you know that every district that I've worked for, every educational entity has always used John Maxwell, all of his products, materials. So when you speak to John Maxwell, if you could tell him that Alfreda Love, all the way from Waco, Texas, says that anytime he wants to come on my ministry, he is more than welcome to.
we'll do, Alfreda. In fact, I'm going to be, actually it's interesting because I accidentally booked a call tonight and at the same time that I've got a call with John, so I've got to, once I get off of my speaking engagement, I'll see if I have enough time to jump on and catch his ear, and if I do, I'll be sure to let him know tonight, and if not, I'll be sure to let him know next time I see him.
Okay, and Mr. Chris, please stay in touch with me, because I want some more information about that institution, so So please stay in touch with me. I thank you for your time. And if any callers on the line would like to ask a question, you may do so at this time. Okay. So, Mr. Chris, once again, I thank you so much. May God bless you. And please stay in touch with me, okay?
You're welcome, Alfreda. Thank you very much, too. And just real quick, for all your listeners, please reach out. Visit chrishemsprague.com and reach out and let me know how I can best serve you. And here's the one thing I would like to leave your listeners with. First of all, I pray for all your listeners to have a great and wonderful day and a great and wonderful life. If I've resonated with you in any way, wonderful, reach out to me and let's see what we can do and see if we're a fit for each other. If the message has resonated with you, but I have not, that's great. That's wonderful. Reach out. Find somebody who can help you find your zero point and find out what you were meant to do. If for some reason either me or the message resonates with you, that's fine as well. May God bless you and keep you and you have a great life. Because here's the thing of it. I'm going to give you six people. And if these six people would not have figured out how they were wired, you be the judge for yourself how different our world would be. The first three are Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and Mother Teresa. If those three people would not have figured out they were meant to serve people and they thought they were meant to be rich, our world would be a much different place and we wouldn't have some of the great, you know, just picture how much different our world would be without those great humanitarians. On the other side, if Steve Jobs, if Richard Branson, a Virgin of the Virgin Companies, Virgin Airlines, Virgin Atlantic, and Bill Gates didn't figure out that they were meant to be rich, meant to own companies, and meant to do what they were meant to do, think of all the technology we wouldn't have and think of a lot of the advancements we wouldn't have. Success means different things to different people. Figure out your DNA. Figure out your zero point. Figure out how you're wired, and then live within that to be the success you were born to be, and you too can change the world. God bless.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much, Mr. Chris. And once again, be sure to give me that information concerning your institution, okay?
Will do.
All right. Thank you so much, and bless you.
Thank you. Bless you.
All right. Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Chris, and as you know, he works closely with Mr. John Maxwell, and as we know, Mr. Maxwell is a powerful, powerful leader. He has written so many books. I remember even studying him at Baylor University. We would use some of his books about leadership as well as Prayer View and at Texas A&M. So, I mean, just reach out to Mr. Chris. I have his information on my webpage. I mean, I felt like I was at a professional development training. I would love to just, you know, hear him again, and I'm going to invite him again to the ministry, and hopefully we can get Mr. John Maxwell because he is so powerful. And I really encourage you, and I'm not a publicist for John Maxwell or anything, but I really encourage you, if you're in education, if you're in ministry, if you're in any type of leadership role or you just want professional growth, I so encourage you to go out and get the products of Mr. John Maxwell. They are powerful. As a matter of fact, part of the ministry when God began showing me the vision that he was going to have me even get into this ministry, I was seeking not only the Bible, but I was seeking great leaders such as John Maxwell, Dr. Martin Luther King, Ken Blanchard, and other individuals who are powerful, powerful, powerful people in the ministry who have great books out that really teaches about touching people's lives and connecting with people. Because once we connect with God, then we need to connect with people so that we can bring them to God. And so I really encourage you to go out and get Mr. Maxwell's book, and we're going to pray that he comes on the Love of Jesus Up ministry. And I'm going to invite all of you to listen in just as you're doing today. So without further ado, I want to thank each and every one of you. I want to thank God, first of all, and then each and every one of you for tuning in, listening to this professional development. This wasn't even an interview. It was a professional development. I'm so energized. And I'm going to find my zero point, and I'm also going to find that book that Mr. Chris wrote. So without further ado, I'm going to have some brief announcements because we have about 10 minutes, and then I will bid you farewell. Be sure to continue to encourage your family and friends to log on to blogtalkradio.com/freetolove. That's blogtalkradio.com/FREDALOVE. The Spiritual Guide on the Go is in local bookstores, Amazon.com, AmazonUK.com. It's also at Fawless.com. Also, Bookworld, that's BookWhirl.com. So be sure to look that book up. Also, you can inbox me, and I can send you a copy as well. I'm available for speaking. I'm available for practically anything that deals with ministry or education. So I'm opening that up. I'm letting you know because a lot of people have been asking. In addition to that, make sure that you continue to watch the Facebook page. That is ALFREDALOVE or FREDALOVE or EMONYA underscore love at yahoo.com. I would love, love, love to have you on the ministry. If you're into ministry, you're a gospel artist, publicist, writer, actor, actress, just positive community figures. Please, please reach out. I would love to have you on the ministry. In addition to that, on tomorrow, please join me for Ms. Karen Showell. She will join us on tomorrow, and she has an impactful story. I mean, this week has just been so amazing because first we had Mr. Chris today. Tomorrow we have Ms. Karen, and I've been speaking with her, and her story is just amazing, what God is doing in her life and her ministry. And, I mean, my adrenaline is just rushing because I'm so excited. I'm excited today, and I know I'm going to be excited tomorrow about what she has to bring to the ministry and what she has to share. So be sure to tune into that. Also, be sure that you govern yourselves accordingly to the announcements. Remember that on August 24th, Cotswold, the Great Ebenezer Baptist Church, is having our homecoming anniversary at 919 Dutton Avenue, Waco, Texas. We're inviting each one of you to come out and share that celebration with us. In addition to that, just make sure that students, that you remain safe and that you are preparing for school. School will be here in a couple of weeks. So just prepare your minds and your bodies. Get some good sleep. Don't stay up to 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning and then expect the day before school that you're going to get up at 6 o'clock if you went to bed at 3, okay? So just make sure that, you know, we govern ourselves according to that. Make sure that if you go out to the parks where the water is, make sure you have fun, but make sure you have life jackets. Make sure you know how deep the water is. Also, any trees, make sure that if you're close by trees, that the trees are rooted, kind of like our souls need to be anchored, right? So that when the storms of life come, we won't just give up. So make sure that those trees are rooted so nothing will fall on you. Just be safe and bless you. And so be sure to join me tomorrow. And as I said before, I really want to encourage you, when you go out to get the Spiritual Guide to Go by Dr. Afrita Love, go out and get the book from Mr. John Maxwell. It is powerful. I'm telling you, it's powerful. It's powerful, powerful. There's not one school district that I can think of who doesn't use his products. Not one. Everyone uses Mr. John Maxwell's products. I mean, he has great leadership notes in his book and things of that nature, so be sure to do that. All right, so this concludes today's Love Lives Jesus Up ministry. So please, please, please be sure to tune in on tomorrow, and if someone asks you what that big, beautiful smile is all about, you tell them that love lifts you up because God is love. Until next time, which is tomorrow, take care of yourselves and each other. Goodbye, everybody.